All right, then get some sleep, Marty. And always good to hear from people at Deacon Punnett. That's my Twitter position. But, you can find out more too at coasttocoastam.com and link up to me from there. Always love to keep the conversation going after the show. Dr. Lori Nadell is the author of The Five Gifts. And we've been talking about the way in which we are experiencing stress and anxiety, and how is it that in so many ways we don't realize what we can learn from it, and instead we run from it, when so often this is the kind of stuff you really have to sort of lean into in order to get over it. But as she said earlier, sometimes it's a matter of finding just the right therapist to do it. We were talking about PTSD with regard to soldiers. That in itself is something which is becomes sort of a discipline within a discipline, doesn't it?
Oh, absolutely, and it's an epidemic that I think that if we as a society should have learned anything from Vietnam, it's the need to take care of the psychological wounds of the men and women who serve when they come home, because even though these wounds are invisible, they stay with people for a lifetime. And there's just not enough help. That's why we have so many veteran suicides,
Yeah.
and it's really shameful that we as a society haven't allocated enough funding and enough research and enough a sufficient number of clinicians who can help people with this, because the men and women who go to serve, they put their lives on the line. And they come back, physically wounded, or they come back safe, but they come back mentally changed. And there's no way that we as civilians, excuse me, can begin to understand the horror of what people see and smell and touch and experience in combat.
I detected the hiccups
Yes, I'm
there
so sorry.
somewhere.
I
No,
swallowed some water the wrong way.
it's so fine. In
I'm
fact,
sorry.
no, don't apologize at all. I think actually that's a really interesting metaphor for this conversation, which is, that kind of happens, and sometimes it happens when you're on the air and you don't mean to, but we just got to work through it. And I think that's, again, comes down to somehow we get. Too often, I think people become very image conscious, and they fear showing something like that or acknowledging something when really that's our fastest way to get through it. And that's why with PTSD, I'm also reminded of the absolute crazy rate of suicide right now with teenage girls
Oh, yes.
in America, which I saw some spike. I don't know if the numbers are correct, but it was like it had doubled in the last 15 years or something.
I think the depersonalization of kind of people judging themselves as individuals against some kind of an ideal that they see online, or what their friends on Facebook or Instagram are showing or seeing. I really think it's becoming very dangerous that people can no longer separate human experience from digital experience.
Yeah, and I think that's it comes back to, again, the somehow that we believe something more that comes through our screen. And so when somebody is saying something, somehow it takes on a greater importance, and we can't quite contextualize how really in the long scheme of things, it's completely irrelevant in our lives. And this comes up in social media when people
All the
really like
time.
get in our grill, right?
All the time. And people will actually come in for sessions because somebody unfriended them on Facebook,
Right.
or their fiance didn't put in a relationship, on the Facebook page, or they didn't like what happened on Instagram. And we're saying, but that's not real. I just don't understand how we've evolved into, I don't know whether it's species-wide, I don't know whether it happens in other countries, but it certainly happens here, where people are actually bullied by these ideals of who they think they're supposed to be compared to whoever the idealized version of what it is to be a teenage girl or what it is to be a young man as presented in social media. And people can't filter anymore between what they see online and what reality is.
And this is where
it's kind of scary.
Yeah. And I think there's also a sense of, you know, this notion of boundaries and what we allow people to control of ourselves almost always comes back to haunt us. We are the people that ultimately are the gatekeepers of what we decide to let in. And whether that's, you know, the difference between guilt and shame. I can feel guilt over something I've done that I think I could have done better and I wish I had done better, but I am almost impervious to when people start to try to shame me. Mm-hmm. I just don't buy into it because that's all about them. That's not right. About me. And that's about getting them to, you know, them trying to manipulate me into doing something that they want me to do. And I don't believe I have a very small shame button and most people can't find it.
I think that's a great asset. I think that it's really important that anybody, you know, who is in any kind of 12-step program knows, and I think that it's a good tool and a good skill to have, whether or not you're in a 12-step program, is to at some point do that fearless moral inventory and to make amends to people whom you have, hurt intentionally or unintentionally, take responsibility for your actions. Although that's very different from shame or guilt. You know, that's
right.
Really, you know, kind of a proactive form of remorse or what we really call conscience.
Right. And I guess really for me, guilt I'm sort of equating with remorse or conscience and not, you know, not a crippling sense of guilt, but just sort of I wish I'd done that a little better. But I think that's where sometimes the easiest thing to do is the hardest thing for people to do, which is to say, I don't care. It is to actually not just be, say, what you're saying, I won't let you do that to me. And I'm sort of reminded of these shows. I've become somewhat fascinated with My 600-Pound Life on the Discovery Channel and Hoarders.
Uh-huh.
They almost seem like the same show to me in a way, people having these bizarre, when I say bizarre, but, you know, self-destructive behaviors of bringing in like every piece of thing they can possibly find into their home until it's a health hazard, or people eating until, you know, they are creating a health hazard for themselves. And it always comes down to something which early on needed treatment and some error and some discussion and the right person to help, because those things, you know, they, if we don't get them out of our, you know, inside of us, they abscess. It rarely gets better on its own.
Right, and that goes back to, you know, we were talking originally about the relationship between the conscious mind and the unconscious mind. The unconscious mind is a lot like a family, and we have different parts of ourselves, and some of these parts are healthier than others, and other parts can be very destructive or self-destructive. But if we were to engage in some kind of a dialoguing process where you could speak to that part of yourself that was a hoarder, you could speak to that part of yourself that was, I'm just thinking about the Collier brothers. There was a famous story, it's actually a true story about these brothers who lived in a brownstone in Harlem, I think it was the 1940s, and they had rigged up this, it was like a newspaper trap above one of the skylights that was supposed to protect them from any burglars getting inside through the roof. And one of the brothers was actually crushed to death when the newspaper trap collapsed on him.
Oh, right.
And
yeah.
He was on his way to help his brother who was blind.
Yeah.
He was stuck in the bathroom.
Oh, God.
And so both of them died because of their hoarding. And a horrible metaphor, but if you were to speak to each of these two brothers, their underlying positive intention for what they were doing probably had to do with providing them with a sense of safety. And that the irony is that, you know, nobody smokes a cigarette and says, wow, I can't wait to get lung cancer. People
Right.
smoke cigarettes because in the moment it gives a sense of relaxation or security, or it fills a certain need. And so, you know, the unconscious mind is quite capable of letting us know what the needs are, so we can find alternative ways of meeting those needs instead of defaulting into these behaviors that ultimately can cost us our lives.
You know, I have these little tricks that I do when I have to go to the dentist. There's just certain things I have to do because I'm, you know, for me, going to the dentist is an act of bravery. And to be honest about the fact that it's painful for me, to having survived a couple of this particularly horrible attack from a dentist, I can intellectually rationalize it. I can do all sorts of things, but I can't get over that visceral feeling. And I don't feel bad about it anymore. I no longer feel like, oh, what a wuss or whatever. Just buck up, you know, and do it. I actually say, okay, I'm going to do the dentist. I'm going to hate this. So I lay out certain things that help me. So when I go into the dentist, I have to wear a certain, like, this is like the only thing, this is true. This is the only place I do this in my life. There's a certain sweater I have to wear, and I can't go in with socks. I usually just go in, I usually wear like loafers and no socks anyway, but that's what I have to, I cannot, there's a feeling of restriction and some other things that I remember from the sense memory of the attack. And so there's certain things I have to avoid. And then I always tell them, look, you can't pin my lower lip against my teeth. If you're going to do something, you have to be very conscious of that, because that's like an immediate trigger for me. And a really good dentist cares. And they're like, okay, good. Thank you. Thank you for telling me. I'll give extra care for that. But it's amazing how many people you can tell, please don't do that. And they'll do it anyway.
Yes.
Like they have to prove to me I was wrong or something. And I think, what's your problem?
Well, I think a lot of people, and I'm not, you know, speaking of dentists in general, but I've had similar experiences with, say, massage therapists, where I've said,
right.
please, you know, be careful in this part of the spine or whatever. And I think they just go into their own kind of altered state of, this is how I do it when I'm working.
Right.
And they forget what the patient has told them. And then they can end up inflicting more pain. And
right.
that may not have been their intention, but they didn't really take the time to listen.
Yeah. So how do we help the many veterans? In light of the conversations we've already tackled, and if you're just tuning in now, we're talking with Dr. Lori Nadel about her book, The Five Gifts, and we're expanding that to talk about the placebo effect and some of the many ways in which the mind works to our advantage even when we don't think it will, or it sort of challenged by the logic of how it works. How do we incorporate those things into our treatment, into our empathy around veterans who are still recovering from a war experience, or families that are still recovering from the fact that the soldier came back with PTSD and sort of altered the whole, you know, composition of the family?
Well, I think you used, you know, one of the five gifts is empathy. I mean, you ask about the five gifts of humility, which takes away our sense of entitlement, allows us to accept the hurt that we're going through. Patience and listening is probably the best gift that we can give to a veteran or anybody who has come through a traumatic loss, whether it's a natural disaster or a car accident, is listening without judging and being patient and letting the person kind of find their way, knowing that you're willing to listen. And empathy is the ability to just, you know, sit with somebody and ask, what do you need, instead of trying to impose what we think they need in order to fix them.
Right.
We don't know. I mean, I don't know when somebody comes into my office. I have no idea what somebody needs in order to feel better. But my intention is to be able to listen carefully to both the conscious mind and the unconscious mind, and to help offer some ideas or suggestions or tools. Empathy, and then the fourth gift is forgiveness. And I don't expect somebody who was shot at or who lost somebody in a terrorist act or who survived a shooting to be forgiving, to forgive the perpetrator. I'm not, again, I say these are five gifts and they're not regulations. But when we can step into what it's like to be forgiving, to be in a forgiving state, then we understand that it's not like a light switch where you either forgive or you don't. You can be forgiving 30% today and 5% tomorrow,
right,
and 8% next week. But it's more of a flow state.
Yeah, and it's when we treat it like a verb, not just a noun. We'll pick it up right there. We'll give the numbers you need to join the conversation with Dr. Lori next on Coast to Coast AM. This is Ian Punnett. And that's what we're talking about with Dr. Lori Nadel. If you want to join the conversation right now, that's good. We'll get to open lines coming up at the top of the hour. But in our rolling conversation that we've had, we've covered a lot of different angles of different things. There is one, however, that I think we have left untouched, which we'll do next. On Coast to Coast AM, this is Ian Punnett. We'll get to Bill, who's in Nodak? Yeah, he's in North Dakota. We'll get to him in just a second. Hang on, Bill, and other people who are waiting to talk with Dr. Lori Nadel. But there was a piece to this that I touched on only briefly earlier, so I feel it's worth revisiting in your work, the idea that you handle things creatively, that one of the therapies is, as you say, a creative journey that unlocks your intuition. Are we talking about art therapy in that context?
I'm actually talking about a process called soul collage, which is art journaling. It's not traditional art therapy, which is a very specific, I guess, branch of therapy. Art journaling is really... it was developed by a therapist named Sina Frost, who is a Jungian therapist. And just as when we look at dreams from that kind of perspective, we can say that every symbol of a dream in a dream represents a part of ourselves. When we make, in soul collage, you make a collage on a 5x8 piece of mat, and then through this altered state process of dialoguing with the images kind of come to life and they speak to you, and they actually represent aspects of yourself. And so it's really your deeper intuition and it's your deeper soul wisdom that communicates with you through this process. And it's very, very powerful for healing trauma, for resolving internal conflicts, and for getting insight and direction about your life path or your soul's purpose.
That's very interesting, and it reminds me that, and that's an interesting distinction about that, by the way, the art, the soul collage versus some of the art therapy that I've seen. But I've gone to displays. I've seen in a local gallery the work done by soldiers or Marines who had, you know, suffered from PTSD as a result of, say, even the last couple of conflicts in Iraq or Afghanistan, and how they were trying to communicate what they went through art to give a visual symbol of what their experience was. And it did help me. I don't know if it helped them, but it helped me understand how they looked at the experience of what they had or what they were laboring under. But I see what you're saying, too, is that idea of that art journey and being able to write about it, is its own kind of thing. And that maybe the first time that some people have had to confront to themselves exactly what they're thinking and feeling.
Well, what's interesting about this process is that I think there's a quote by Jung that says that often the hands can solve a mystery that the mind has struggled with or the intellect has struggled with in vain. And
right.
So, it's kind of like a more indirect process than asking somebody to draw or write about something that they're feeling or that they experience. They're actually looking at hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of images that I provide from publications and magazines and, you know, other some of my own photography, and the images will kind of, you know, like a card or an image will fall out of a pile, and you look at it and you go, aha, that's just what I was looking for. It's like your intuition, and they're these synchronistic kind of events where the images will kind of draw themselves to you. And then you arrange them when in the process of cutting and pasting and arranging these images on this card, it takes you into an altered state. It kind of automatically puts you into a meditative, creative state in which your hands are actually resolving or coming up with a pattern or coming up with a process in which the images are layered, and they're not just two-dimensional. They actually have layering and three-dimensionals. There's a richness to that, and then you discover what they really mean through this process of dialoguing. And it's a very, very powerful process that people are always amazed at the uniqueness of each card that they make and the power of what their own inner wisdom has to tell them.
I love Jung. I've always been interested in Carl Jung, and it reminds me that earlier this evening I was looking at a book on Amazon written by a coastie out there who had written to me on Twitter called The Mouth of the Lion, and it's on Amazon, but it's a fictional work about Carl Jung and Adolf Hitler, if Jung had encountered Hitler, and what he would have been able to extract from Adolf Hitler. And I thought that was such an interesting idea. Let's go to Bill, who's on a wild card line in North Dakota for Dr. Lori Nadell on Coast to Coast AM. Bill?
Hey, Bill.
Well, good evening to both of you. I just wanted to ask, just for clarification, what is the definition of PTSD? Because I've was in the Vietnam War, and I've lately talked to kids coming back from Iraq and Afghanistan, and I just wanted to get sort of a layman's layout of, I know you've been talking about other forms of PTSD, natural disasters and so on, but there is one hell of a problem with young kids killing themselves today.
Yes, it's a huge problem. And first, I wanted to thank you for your service. Unfortunately, I really believe that Vietnam veterans, I myself was in college during the 1960s, and I know Vietnam veterans are probably the forgotten population among all the servicemen and women. And so I really want to thank you for your service. Unfortunately, your needs really were overlooked and forgotten. Trauma, we talk about trauma when we kind of use it when we really mean to use the word disturbing or upsetting. But trauma is not a bad hair day. Trauma is when you witnessed or you experienced or you survived a sudden life and death situation. And very often, of course, in combat, you see people you know getting savagely wounded or blown up, or you may go into an area and see children or women who are wounded. You may see the even dead enemies, and the sight and the smell of the horror of witnessing sudden death can cause your physical body to have certain kinds of reactions, which can persist and can recur over time. So when we're talking about PTSD, we're talking about the feeling of re-experiencing, that your body feels as if it's happening again. The anxiety, like flashes and waves of anxiety that make you want to avoid anything that reminds you of that experience. And then the third piece is arousal, or what we call hypervigilance. And when you're hypervigilant, you have something very often is called the startle response, where somebody drops a spoon in a restaurant and you feel like your body is hotwired and you want to jump out of your skin. And because there's something that's very physical about PTSD, it's like your body has these reactions because it's like your nervous system feels like it's hotwired. And you can be asymptomatic for 40 years, 50 years, and then it can just be that one sound, that little popping sound that suddenly takes you back to the jungle and you're re-experiencing what it was like to listen to a machine gun, or you smell something, and it can be a positive memory. It can take you back to the mess hall, or it can be the sound of music, and it can be a few bars of music that right. can suddenly cause you to feel as though you're back in that moment, reliving it. And so those are the three elements of PTSD. It's what we call flashbacks, or re-experiencing the event in your body as if it's happening around you again. Avoidance or anxiety that can cause a phobic response, the tendency to isolate and withdraw from people. And then there's the hyper-arousal or the hyper-vigilant, where you have an exaggerated startle response and you feel irritable and very, very jumpy. And any combination of those three really can form a very unpleasant cocktail inside your skin. So some of the techniques that I talk about in my book, The Five Gifts, Discovering Hope, Healing, and Strength When Disaster Strikes, are physical techniques that you can do to take the edge off the physical sensation of feeling that you're not safe in your own skin. And they're very, very simple. And I actually have one that I demonstrate on my website. If you go to laurienedel.com and you go to the Five Gifts page, I have a little demonstration of one of the techniques that you can use that literally will help your body to calm down and take the edge off that feeling that you're reliving it again.
Joe is on a first-time caller line from Sydney, Nebraska on Coast to Coast AM. Joe?
Hey, Joe.
Hi. How you doing?
Good, how are you?
We're running out of time, so I hope we can get more people on if we keep the questions and the answers a little shorter. Go ahead, Joe.
Yes, I was electrocuted from a high power line back in 1985 and survived it by CPR and everything, and did just an entrance wound, exit wound and stuff, and had high power line nightmares of high power lines for 23 years. I was on depression medication for 8 years, and I'm not on any medication. I just go in spirit. Dr. Kenneth Isaac, I listened to him on you guys about 3 years ago. He talked about PTSD, learned a little bit from Dr. Isaac, and I really appreciate you, Dr. Lori, I really learned a lot just now, so I really appreciate it. And I guess the Natural Psychology Foundation.com is also what Dr. Kenneth Isaac said to go to, is a good source too, I think. And but I'm managing, but you're exactly right. And another doctor taught me that when I go through these things, picture a Bengal tiger, and then take that picture down to a picture of a kitten. That's how he said to do it. But it's hard to do when you're going through something. It's
Really.
It's hard to remember the tools, you know? So.
Well, I think that's a great technique. That'll definitely help. And I think it's important for anybody who, I'm sorry of what you experienced, but the thing to remember is that you're a normal person having normal reactions to an abnormal and very terrifying situation.
Renee, west of the Rockies, is in Tucson on Coast to Coast AM. Renee?
Hi.
Hey,
hi.
Renee.
Hi, Dr. Lori?
Yes, hi.
Hi. A lot of what you said is really resonating with me, and I haven't been able to. I've had a trauma-filled life. It began at 4, some sort of sexual abuse, alcoholic mother, thrown into the world with no skills, no tools, no money when I was very young. well, and before that, seventh grade, I was thrown in with my stepsister, who was maniacal, hippie, drugs, all that sort of stuff. And I feel the isolation, hypervigilance, irritable, the body fear.
Right.
There's been multiple attempts on my life, and it seems like all these events are, the traumatic events are coming more and more frequently, and they're becoming more and more dangerous. I mean, I've had some super close calls on my life, and I've been completely wiped out financially every time I get something, and everything that's ever mattered to me has been taken away from me repeatedly.
Oh. Well, a thought on that, Dr. Lori?
I'm sorry to hear that. Sometimes these things go in cycles and waves, and again, you know, I really have spoken to many people from many walks of life, and you know, even Viktor Frankl, who was a survivor of Auschwitz, he said that everybody has their own Auschwitz, and we can't compare miseries, but the five gifts of humility, patience, empathy, and empathy for yourself, and forgiveness, and growth can help you feel more stable no matter what life is throwing at you. And I'm sorry we don't have more time because your situation is very complex.
Right.
So thank you for sharing that.
I love that idea, Renee, for whatever it's worth, about empathy for oneself. And I think that idea of self-forgiveness or self-permission, that's like the hardest thing, I think, for a lot of people, because they have all these voices in their head that stop them from forgiving themselves. And instead, they keep the rotisserie spinning.
Yeah. But absolutely. It is the hardest piece in ourselves.
Joe is on a wild card line in Idaho on Coast to Coast AM for Dr. Lori Nadal. Go ahead, Joe.
Hey, Joe. Hi.
Good morning.
Good morning.
I had a question about anger and kind of what you were talking about with anger. And I guess it's been kind of my observation that a lot of anger is has to do with it kind of comes from somebody's lack of empathy and I guess you call it the five gifts, the five different things. And but then, you know, you got this kind of elusive righteous anger over here,
right?
And but it seems like that, you know, it's like, oh, my garbage man's cousin's brother's friend had righteous anger, and therefore it exists, and my anger is righteous. And it's kind of an excuse for my lack of the empathy and the forgiving and the five gifts. Can you kind of address that a little bit?
That's an interesting point.
Well, it's an interesting point. I think that, you know, anger, it's a normal human response. It's kind of what we do with it. You know, you can use it to move mountains, or you can use it to harm yourself or somebody else. So how does anger express itself in your life, and is it something that leads you to positive change? I remember I had a client once, and she was having a fight with a neighbor, and the neighbor said, you know, you're a fat slob and you never put the garbage cans out properly. And so she lost 40 pounds. She said, I got so angry that he told me that I lost 40 pounds. So that I could just, you know, so it really depends on how we internalize it and interpret it. Anger in and of itself is neither negative or positive. It's what we do with it that makes the difference.
I love that. In effect, she made herself more attractive to the person that she was angry at, too, in a sort of subconscious kind of way. Dr. Lori, I enjoyed every second of this. You were just terrific, and I hope to have you back on again. We'll go to open lines coming up, but really, I so much appreciate it. Please find out more about this important work by going to coasttocoastam.com. And thank you, Lori, for your time tonight. Where do you want to take the show? We'll find out coming up in just a moment when we do open lines. And you can pick up on some of those things we started there, too, if you want, on Coast to Coast AM. This is Ian Punnett.